Welcome to Silence the Mind Cluck. I'm your host, Maria T. Finch, and I'm super glad that you're here. Get ready to quiet that mind and reap the rewards. Hello, everyone. I am Maria Finch. I'm an inner intelligence coach, and I am thrilled to have Tim Hughes here with me today. Tim, welcome.
Hello, Maria. Good to be here. Good to have a chat.
Yeah, awesome. So to start with, tell us a bit about you.
So I'm CEO and co-founder of a company called DLA Ignite. Uh-huh. We help organizations transform their companies to using digital. The usual place where we would start is in sales. So it's about making sure that the salespeople get more pipeline and more revenue by being digital rather than analog.
Okay, that's important.
Yes.
All right. So tell us about a time in your life when you faced a large amount or particularly loud mind cluck.
Yes. I was told at school that I shouldn't ever get a job where I needed to read and write. I must admit, I wasn't particularly academic. But probably I didn't, because I'm an introvert, I probably didn't speak out. And schools tend to be set up for extroverts rather than us introverts.
Yeah, true.
And so when I finally got my first book deal, which was back in 2016, I went through a massive, I shouldn't be doing this. And I really needed to concentrate on focus. Even more so. I mean, I give presentations and I speak, but it was never something that I thought I would do as a teenager, because I was always very shy. My mom always goes, I ring her up and says, I've just spoken to 250 people. And she says, I can't believe the little boy who used to go red if anyone spoke to him when I wrote my first book, I shouldn't be here. I shouldn't be doing this. They've made a mistake. What am I going to do? This is all going to go wrong. Everyone's going to find out that I'm an idiot and all that sort of stuff.
Okay. And, I think that so many people can relate to that, no matter whether it's writing a book, getting a new job, whatever you're going to take on, like everybody experiences that kind of mind cluck. So what helped you break through that and, do it anyway?
Well, first and foremost, I had a writing partner who'd written a book before. Oh. And that was really, really helpful, because he kind of said, well, this is what we're going to do. Okay, so first and foremost, I had a process.
Yeah.
And whenever we wrote a chapter, what we would do is the two of us would get together and we'd get a flip chart, and we would basically sketch out what that chapter would look like. We took it in turns to write the chapters, and he would rip, after we worked out what he was going to structure, you'd rip it off and say, right, go away and write it.
Okay.
My partner was very supportive of me, and she has been through the whole of the process. Uh-huh. Having now written three, she's guided. She's the person that did the final reading of the book, because she actually found out in the first book that the publisher forgot to put the conclusion in.
Oh,
she said there seems to be missing something. I said, what? She says, like a conclusion. I said, there is a conclusion. And she said, well, where is it? It's like, oh, they've missed it out. Wow. So that was interesting. And then really also it was about trying to find a way of focusing. So what would happen? I would have designated writing days. Mm-hmm. So it'd usually be a Sunday. And what would happen is that my partner, she would go out to the family. So she would go off and have a family lunch or something. And I was left totally by myself.
Uh-huh.
To focus on it. And when I did the third book, we actually went to Portugal for 2 weeks. My idea was that it was going to be nice and sunny and the waves were going to lap on my toes as I was writing.
Yeah.
Except Portugal, and it was just before Christmas. And actually, the weekends were warm, but the rest of the time were actually cold. We actually had to have the heating on.
Uh-huh.
But again, it was about taking myself away, especially from the distractions of home and doing home type things and actually having been in a situation where, Tim, there's nothing else you can do but write this.
So let's go backwards a little bit. So starting out with when you're outlining a chapter on a flip chart, what enabled you to go from that kind of outline, and then were you able to just crank it out? Did you battle with yourself a bit as you were trying to write each of those chapters? Like, what was that process like for you?
One of the things I'm able to do is actually focus and focus right down on something. And I found that once we had that structure, and actually it was Matt's counsel, which was he and I would basically brainstorm it out. So in effect, what we're getting there is we're getting buy-in from both of us that that's the way it's going to be. There would then be five subject headings. So a chapter has to be 5,000 words because it's a 60,000 word book. It's 12 chapters.
Okay.
So you've got to write 5,000 words. So each of those headings was 1,000 words.
Okay.
So in a way, it was one of those things where how do you break a problem down? Well, you break it down into, and really the first book was in a situation where I took the contents of my head and wrote it down. So I was in that situation where I'd done something for 2 or 3 years. I'd actually rolled out social selling across 4,000 people in the corporate role I was in. I kind of knew it, and I kind of knew the problems, and I just did a brain dump, and that supported me as well.
So what were the challenges? So I understand, like, for our audience, one of the takeaways here is, so it's taking a bigger task and breaking it into more bite-sized pieces. It's having a trusted advisor who can help you with the brainstorming and figuring all of that out. What else did you do to just facilitate shutting down the negative chatter in your mind?
I think that one of the things I've had to do is you know, you constantly, well, I constantly have this conversation going on in my head.
I think everybody does.
I was only in my 40s when I realized that everybody had it.
Yeah.
I thought it was just me. I thought, you know, and it was so this conversation going on in my head. And I just had to reiterate to myself, and I must have said it, you know, these people have gone through, you know, Kogan Page, the publisher, meaning these people, have gone through a process. They're experts. They know what it's like for first-time authors. Okay. And they actually have a structure as well, which is where you go and where write, I think it was 3 or 4 chapters, and then they get an external person in to actually read it. And we happened to choose that person, and they said, yeah, this kind of fits together. So there was that external governance going on. But also, in terms of the question, was about my head, it was about having that ongoing conversation with myself to say, these people think that it's externally think this is okay, therefore it must be okay.
Yeah.
The conversation wasn't in so much here. I was taking it out and giving it to the Kogan Page. But these people say it's okay, therefore it's okay. Shut up.
Yeah, that is really powerful, because I think we can tell ourselves things that aren't true so easily.
Yeah.
And so validating with an external source, I mean, there are times when that doesn't work, but there are times when that's really useful, because, like you said, you know, they believed in your book and they believed in your ability to write this book or these books. And so you could capture their confidence and give it to yourself.
Yes. I had a great conversation with myself. I started running back in 2020 during lockdown, because I wanted to be, if I was going to catch COVID, I wanted to be as fit as I could.
That's smart.
I enjoyed running at school, but I've never really done it afterwards. And I decided I'm just going to run 5K. This is not about, I'm not going to run a marathon. I'm not going to be the fastest. I'm just going to do that. And I visualized myself. We were in France on holiday. We got stuck, actually. Because there was a lockdown. And so we got stuck. So when we came back, we had to self-isolate for 2 weeks.
Uh-huh.
Sounds like the mega history of, but at the time it was really serious.
Yeah.
But I visualized myself basically, okay, I can run. I'm going to do that. And I used an app. There's an app called Couch to 5K, which enabled me to do it. Uh-huh. And gradually I did 5K for 18 months. And then what I've done is I've actually increased it when I felt comfortable. But I was actually running in the street. It was December. It was cold. I was freezing, even though I was running and it was quite warm. It was actually it was on an untreated road and I was actually sliding on my feet. And I start having this conversation saying, why are you doing this, Tim?
Yeah.
You know, you could be at home, you could get an extra hour of sleep.
Yeah.
And you don't need to, you know, so what, you put on a bit of weight, you know, it doesn't really matter. You know, what that conversation. Mm-hmm. But the other side of my brain said, I started laughing because I couldn't believe that this was going on in my head.
Yeah.
But the other side of my brain said, yeah, but we're now 3 miles away from home. If we start walking, it's going to be really, really cold.
Uh-huh.
And the other side of my brain go, oh, yeah, well, we better keep running then, don't we, so we can get home quicker.
Yeah.
So it was about setting myself up to actually for the negative part of the brain to actually say, yeah, you're right, actually, we should carry on.
Yeah, you know, that is a really interesting approach. So I talk a lot about rewiring the brain, rewriting the scripts that our brains run. And that's an interesting way to do it, by actually having a conversation between sort of your cheerleader and your critic. Mm. And then setting it up so that the cheerleader actually wins and the critic can learn from the cheerleader of like, oh, you know what? We are all like, look, we've already run 3 miles.
It's another 3 miles back. And it's just if you walk, it's going to be worse. And you're right.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. That's really interesting. I haven't thought about it that way. That's a good way to do it. And one of the things that I would encourage for our listeners is make sure we all have the inner critic. Everybody has that. Some people have multiple versions of the inner critic, but we also all have inner cheerleaders. And when you can tap into those, that's really powerful because you can start to retrain things when you let your inner cheerleader be louder than your inner critic.
Well, it was one of those moments where in life where I was running and I couldn't stop laughing because of the fact that had been set up, and then I actually thought, this is a really good technique, actually. I need to do this more often.
Yeah. And so do you use that technique? Like, do you try to, you know, so you get the one voice in your head saying, no, you can't do it, you're not good enough, blah blah blah, whatever it is, and then can you summon that other voice to say, oh, wait a minute, I think we can do this?
Well, it's trying to get that. So I mean, there's a, because you've got that discussion, there will be an argument. But yes, I have tried to get to the point where the negative side will actually go to the positive side. Actually, you're right.
Uh-huh.
Because otherwise it's always a counter, you know, we always get this counter argument going on. Well, I have tried it. I mean, it was only like 8 weeks ago. So, you know, in terms of the span of my life, I've only just started actually trying to use the technique.
Well, and it's very interesting because I have learned that often we are dealing with some sort of internal conflict when we're stressed out or whatever, because there are two sides of us that are trying to get different things accomplished. And by reconciling that internal conflict, you really return to center and you're able to operate from center, which is a place where decisions are easier. The path is easier because you're not engaged in this battle. I think that's so interesting that happened to you organically. And, you know, I will say, and I will say that running, so bilateral stimulation, meaning you can like tap on one side of your face, tap on the other side of your face. So pacing when you're running and hearing those footfalls, that is a form of bilateral stimulation, which enables you to get to information that you might not reach otherwise. And so it's really interesting that you ended up having that conversation with yourself, you know, hearing this conversation while running. It makes a lot of sense.
That's interesting because I did a meditation course during lockdown.
Uh-huh.
And there was a meditation course on the Calm app. Uh-huh. And what I find now with running is that I, in a way, I get to a state of meditation.
Absolutely.
And I've got, you know, sometimes when you're driving down the road and you go, God, I don't remember driving down that.
Yeah.
because you were so intense thinking about something. And I've got to that state now with running where I don't remember running down parts because you're, in effect, it's this meditation state that you're in. Meditative state.
Yeah, absolutely. And one of the things that's really interesting is the more you pay attention to that, the more often you'll find you can get there. So for example, I can get there doing the dishes. I can get there vacuuming my house. I can get there taking a walk. Like there's all kinds of ways to get yourself to that meditative state. And it's just, you don't have to be sitting in the lotus position and listening to something to get yourself into a meditative state. You can do it in all kinds of different ways. But one of the things that's really interesting and that I really want to highlight from what happened to you while running is the opportunity to tune in and pay attention to what is the conversation going on in your head and why is it happening? You can learn a lot from that.
Yeah, maybe it was just because it was really, really cold and it's dark and there's no one around and you just, in a way, there's nothing else. There's no other there's no music on or well, there was.
Right. But you're outside. There's all kinds of things going by you, you know, so it does take some practice to like pay attention.
Yeah, and it was something that was interesting, but I have found that the running has become an ability for me. I mean, it's always an ability for me to think.
Yeah.
And some time when I don't have any distractions because of, you know, I'm following a route. I've done the same route now for pretty much 2.5 years. And therefore I'm not, all I need to think about is what's going on here. And I find that's a great way of for me innovating.
Yes, absolutely. I have found that anytime I'm working on, I need to write something or I'm trying to solve something. I have a second business and sometimes I'm working out some sort of issue there. And if I take a walk, I figure it out really fast. Hmm. I think of it as body in motion, mind in motion.
Hmm. Hmm. I didn't know about but I can see that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and so you've written 3 books now. Do you feel like you've gotten really good at silencing mind clock that enables you to be really productive? Is it something that you deal with regularly and what do you do?
So the second book was pretty straightforward because I knew what to do.
Yeah.
And the third book again, what I found with the third book is that it was, even though it was the same amount of hard work, it was, I know what I'm doing. You know, it's a bit like going and getting the train. Or the first day at school. The first day at school is terrifying. The second day is a little bit, and then the third day, well, I know what I'm doing. I found it a lot easier. And I didn't, on the third book, I didn't have any reservations about, it was like, I'm doing this. I can do, I can do this. This is easy.
Right.
And I'm actually going to have conversations about the fourth book at some point, but I'm over it.
Yeah, that's great. So what about just in your day-to-day life? Because I mean, I maintain that everybody experiences mind clock throughout the day, all day. It's just, I think it's part of the human condition. Do you pay attention to that? Do you have ways to quiet it? What are what do you think about there?
I have situations where, you know, I've done lots of things. You know, I've been in sales for 25 years. I've been in lots of situations where I go, wow, this is a massive presentation. This is the presentation of my life. And then 2 weeks later, God, this is the presentation of my life. And this, you know, and it gets to the point where I have lots of presentations of your life.
Yeah.
And while presentations are important and I still get, and I'm still nervous before presentations. Mm-hmm. But, and I think it's actually important that you are, because I think it keeps you, I think it keeps you on your toes. Mm-hmm. But because I've done lots of those, it kind of feels that it's pretty straightforward, but I know what happens is I have this thing in my diary where I basically have this blockage in the diary.
Okay.
Or the calendar, as you would say in the States. And what tends to happen is that I have difficulty with this piece in the calendar, and I have to get through it until I can actually start thinking about other things.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
And there just seemed to be this sort of blockage, and I'll finish the presentation or something. I go, wow, that's over, and now I can actually move on to actually thinking about the next presentation or whatever it is I've got to do.
So one of the ways that you solve what's happening in your mind is that you give yourself dedicated time and you say, okay, I'm going to do one thing at a time. So right now my focus is this next presentation, and then I'll move on after that.
Yeah. And what I find is that with presentations, I have to do things beforehand. I was presenting in the afternoon, and therefore I blocked out time to prepare in the morning, I would never prepare because I would be too nervous.
Uh-huh.
And I've only learned this over time, which is where I know that. I've got my own podcast, so I'm interviewing somebody on Thursday of this week. Uh-huh. So the prep for that Thursday presentation, I've actually done before I came on to see you.
Yes.
Because I wanted to make sure that my mind was clear of, oh my God, I've got to go on and interview this person. I've learned that over time. That I need to make sure that I've got that space. And also what I do is I do time blocks in my calendar. Uh-huh. So I needed to read this person's book. So I've basically blocked out 3 hours of my day today to do that. So, it's not like I do an hour and then I do a call and then another hour. It's this 3 hours. I'm going to shut the door. I'm going to get a cup of tea. Don't disturb me.
Yeah. So takeaway for our audience is So number one, for preparing for things, don't wait till the last minute, especially something where you know you're going to be nervous and you know you won't be able to focus. So you build that in. But I think a lot of dealing with our minds is really learning ourselves and learning what works and what doesn't. And everybody is different. What works perfectly for you might not work for somebody else at all. So I think that trial and error, but a lot of it is just about paying attention. So one of the things that I always encourage people to do is pay attention when something in your life goes really well, and even write it down. So you have a presentation where you think, wow, I nailed that. So write down everything about it. How did you prepare? When did you prepare? What did you do beforehand? How did you, I think everybody gets nervous before presentations. So what did you do to calm yourself? What made that presentation so great? Because when you learn these things, you can repeat them.
Yeah, and I agree. I think it's a great technique. And I think, over time you learn certain things, either because of, like you turn up and you've forgotten the notes. Oh my God, I've got to present it without notes. And then you find actually it's easy to do it without notes because you're so passionate, whatever. But yeah, I think you learn things over time. And I'm a big prepper. Uh-huh. I'm constantly going back and looking over things. And I make, loads, and I'm a big note writer because I found when I was at university, the only way that I remembered stuff was to write it down.
Yeah, I'm similar. I write lots and lots of things because if I write something down, it's locked in.
I worked for this sales VP quite early on when the iPad came out. And he said, we're all moving to using iPads and stuff. And I said, okay, well, so I'll give it a try. I couldn't remember anything. Mm-hmm. And I went back to using a notebook.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it was worth experimenting.
Absolutely. And for somebody else, they might remember things that they type a note in their phone or they type a note on their computer. And for other people, it's like pen to paper. For some people, it's literally just memorizing it in your mind. Everybody's different, but figuring out what really works well for you. And I think one of the things that's also really important to pay attention to is when something doesn't go well, to actually like look at it and say, okay, what gave me that terrible feeling in my stomach? When did that feeling start? And what was I doing at that time? And was I not well prepared enough? Did I not like what I was wearing? like it can be anything. But by actually paying attention to that, paying attention to all of these things, both good things and negative things, it helps you silence mind clock because you know what, you know how you go through certain situations. Obviously, when you're in a brand new situation, you have no idea how it's going to go, but you can draw similarities and you can draw on your past experience to give yourself confidence and calm as you go into that situation.
Yeah, there's a sports piece of advice. I did some, for a couple of years, I did quite a lot of cycling on a mountain bike. I did a number of sponsored cycles and stuff.
Neat.
So I did London to Brighton. And
oh, wow. Uh-huh.
And the advice always was, don't experiment on the day of the
exactly.
event.
Exactly. Exactly.
You do all the so you work out the best shoes or the best what you're going to wear and stuff that on all your test rides mm-hmm. and on the day that you actually do the ride when you go to London to Brighton, which is 55 miles, mm-hmm. you know. It's going to be successful. It's a bit like the old, you win the game by training in the gym, and you know that you're going to win when you actually go out on the pitch. But I found when I did one sponsored ride, up until that point, it had been fairly average British weather. And on the day of the sponsored ride, it was actually really, really hot.
Oh, uh huh.
And all of a sudden, I was taking on more water than I planned. And I've also got very fair skin, so I was actually putting on suntan lotion and mm-hmm. those things I hadn't prepared for.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But I knew that when I actually went out that day to get on my bike, all of the things I'd prepared all lots of things, but I'd prepared them in pretty much the 18 months I'd been building up to the it wasn't a race, it was a sponsored ride, but
yeah,
up to that day.
Yeah, I think that's also another thing to think about is that as much as you prepare, you've got to maintain some flexibility for the things that come flying at us that we don't expect. But I think part of being able to have that security is that you know you've covered as many bases as you can. And so that makes you feel pretty confident going in. And then when you're like, oh dear, I've got to stop and, put on more suntan lotion, then you're like, okay, that's fine. I can do that, as opposed to being like, oh no. It's just a way to like keep yourself calm and in the moment, just because all of your preparation in advance was so good.
Well, I made it. So
yeah, congratulations.
It must have been okay. But it was trying to make sure that I had all those things in place.
Yeah, I hear you. I hear you. We are blowing through our time really quickly, so I wanted to give you an opportunity. Is there anything else you'd like to share with our audience or tell our audience about before we start to sign off?
Really, just to say, I wanted to come on and share my experience, and I hope everybody has been able to learn something.
Yeah.
It's for me actually coming on and doing a podcast like this is actually quite new for me.
Okay.
So again, it was about so I don't do this, I've not done a podcast like this before, so this is about sharing something, and I wanted to do that. I'm in the process of selling my third book, which is called Social Selling Techniques to Influence Buyers and Changemakers, which is available on Amazon. But my task here wasn't to come on and sell the book. My task was actually to come on and actually put myself out of my comfort zone and talk about things that I hadn't talked about in the past.
Well, that's great. And how has this experience been for you?
It's been really interesting. You have a process that we have to go through to basically come on. I sat down and followed that process because you have Maria, if you want to come on this podcast, Maria has a number of questions you have to answer.
Yes.
And I went through that and I said, right, this is what I'm going to do. Because what I wanted to do was actually put myself out of my comfort zone and actually talk about some things which were not necessarily, I can talk about sales.
Right.
Time, yeah. Uh-huh. But what I wanted to do was actually talk about some of the things on the periphery, about the things that I've been thinking about and some of the things that I've been impacted me, and maybe that I can actually share those with other people so they can go, and maybe they can learn. And I'm hoping that people can actually have got something from this.
I have no doubt that they will. And I think, hats off to you for choosing to do this, because I think it's a great thing to do. And I think one of the things that I really want to do with this podcast is attract people from all walks of life, because everybody has a slightly unique approach. And, I wonder, because of your extensive expertise in sales, if like you're really comfortable with the idea of conversations. And so for you, conversations in your mind totally make
But I'm an
sense.
introvert.
Right, but that's and that makes it all the more powerful to say like, okay, but I'm an introvert and I've got these conversations going on in my mind and I can use them to my advantage. I think that's a really wonderful thing.
Well, thank you, and I hope people have been able to learn something, and I'm you know I'm I wanted to share my experience so people can learn, because I think nowadays that's so important. The internet is an amazing resource, and there must be people out there that are searching and going, I've got this conversation going on in my head. Is that right or is that wrong? And they, oh, we found this. I found this podcast where there's Maria Finch and Tim Hughes speaking, and actually, it's actually very normal, or whatever the question was. And hopefully, somebody gets something from it.
Absolutely. All right. Well, Tim, thank you so much for coming on and for chatting with me. I really appreciate it, and I'm sure our audience does too.
Thanks, Maria.
All right. Thank you. So, everyone, have a great day. Thanks for listening. Bye. Thanks for listening. If you found this content helpful, please like, comment, and share across your social media. Are you sick of mind clucking up your days? Book a free initial consult with me at mindcluck.com and let's silence it. Thanks and have a great week.